This is the Dead TV Podcast, a podcast dedicated to canceled TV series in the horror, science fiction, and fantasy genre, and I am your host, Dr. Chris.
And I'm Mr. Seneca.
Tonight's episode of the Dead TV Podcast is episode 7 of Constantine. Mr. Seneca has the episode title and synopsis for us.
Episode 7, Blessed Are the Damned, originally aired December 5th, 2014. While in art class, Zed has a bizarre vision of snakes that lead her and John to a small town where a preacher has mysteriously gained the ability to heal his congregation. Dun, dun, dun.
And what's so funny, again, I constantly like reference Supernatural on this. The next episode of Supernatural we're airing next week is about a preacher who does the same thing. But he has the a reaper helping him do it.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's pretty interesting.
And the episode's called Faith, and actually guest stars Julie, the amazing, talented, and beautiful Julie Benz.
The episode actually takes place in Briarwood, Kentucky, which is a real place.
Oh, yes, not a made-up town like most of the episodes of Constantine.
Exactly. According to the 2000 census, this place only had 554 people, only 136 families total.
Wow.
So it's a very tiny place.
Wow. And I also want to mention that we'll be talking with her a little bit more in just a few minutes here in the episode. We have one of the actresses from this episode on the show with us, Megan West.
Hi there.
Hi. Who plays the angel Imogen in this episode. And her dog is with us, too.
Yep, he likes to protect the house. Sorry about that.
Just a quick question, Megan. Did you actually film in the town that Mr. Seneca just said?
No, we did not.
Okay.
We filmed in Dallas, Georgia, actually.
Okay. Is the population of Dallas, Georgia 500 people?
It probably is. I probably don't know the exact amount, but we were in a barn in Dallas, Georgia. Yeah.
Now, written on this mystical box that the snake priest is carrying is, God is the Father and Jesus is the Son, and thy Holy Ghost is forever one, which, according to my former youth minister, Pastor Jim, and my friend Ryan, who goes to church a little bit more than I do, this is not a quote from the Bible and totally made up for the TV series Constantine.
Yes. That's not surprising.
No.
No.
Not with Constantine. A lot of things are made up, including lots of characters, but that's what keeps it entertaining and fascinating, and I think what people really loved about it. I mean, I think I got probably one of the biggest responses out of this television show because people are so fascinated with these type of characters. I remember the day after it aired, somebody dressed up completely in my character's costume and posted it and like added me on Twitter. I was like, wow, you built the costume.
Wow.
Wow. In like less than 24 hours. Yeah.
Wow. With the black wings and everything?
Yeah, like Jeez. Lots of fan art. It's amazing. It's amazing this type of genre of show brings some really cool fans.
Now, Mr.
Very enthusiastic.
Now, Mr. Seneca, in all of your travels, as the when we get to the church, we realize these are snake Bible people. Have you ever encountered any of these type of people in all of your mystical travels all over the planet?
Well, personally, no. but I don't really run in those circles. I run in more of the occult circles. But as I was doing my research for this, there was actually a snake-handling pastor that died from being bitten by a rattlesnake in Kentucky. And this was in 2014. Life imitating art, perhaps? But it was in Hazard, Kentucky. And it's like a Pentecostal belief system that, the handling of snakes comes into it. It's kind of an ancient practice. Basically, it's the belief that you're messing with danger and nothing can harm you because God is on your side. Well, you know, that is completely not true because this pastor died from it.
But also, the snakes represent the Satan from the Garden of Eden, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Man, they did an episode of The X-Files, kind of like the same thing, not a priest bringing people, you know, healing people, but Mulder and Scully go investigate a snake pastor. And of course, if you know the X-Files, Scully is a very devout Catholic, and she, you know, she very much believes in God and stuff. And that was a very, you know, cross religious viewpoint between the two characters, the priest in the episode and Scully.
In this episode, right in the beginning, before the opening credits, the pastor gets bitten by the snake and then miraculously revives. You know, there's a glowing something in his hand. You don't really know what it is right then. Turns out to be Imogen's angel feather.
Mm-hmm.
Then we cut over to Zed taking an art class, a nude artist. This must be the art class that John referred to her being at in the previous episode with Chaz, which is kind of funny considering Chaz is not in this episode. He's off with his daughter hanging out with her for the whole episode.
Yeah, it's they're trading off on their duties here.
Yeah.
So the art model, his name is Eddie, trying to set up a date with her, and she's, you know, reluctant, but finally gives in. And at the end of the episode, he gets stood up. But hopefully that was for a good reason.
And we'll get more back to Eddie later on as he doesn't exactly go away. John, Zed goes to the bunker to meet up with John, and John's got the Grim Reaper's scythe, which you have to believe is probably the actual scythe of the Grim Reaper, considering it's John Constantine.
Yeah, he really travels in those circles, friends with demons, and, you know, being... having a tool from the Grim Reaper doesn't factor too far from his wheelhouse, you know?
The one thing I cannot understand is, Megan, you said you guys filmed in Georgia, and I was stationed in Fort Benning, Georgia, when I was in the military. I know how the Georgia heat is, and from people I've talked to who've worked on the set of The Walking Dead, the sweat on their brows in those episodes is not something that makeup department is applying. It's actually, like, pouring profusely sweat. But John Constantine's wearing a fucking trench coat in this episode.
Yes, it's amazing. Yeah, the Matt Ryan, the guy who plays John, is incredible. I was lucky. I think we filmed, so it aired
in December.
December. Yeah. I think we filmed it only in October. So we got kind of lucky that October month is like, you know, it can go back and forth in Georgia, but I think we were pretty lucky in the sense because I was wearing so many layers of clothes.
Oh, God.
and like a harness for the wings sometimes, because some of it's, of course, CGI and some of it's not. But he wears like a full-on suit every time, and he's always running, always. And it's amazing. He just commits to everything, and he'll be completely sweating, and it's awesome.
He must Matt must have had an amazing assistant on hand. Him being the star of the show, of course, he would get his own personal assistant for every episode. And that assistant must have just been like behind the scenes, off the side with like the, you know, the power battery operated fan and the water bottles and Gatorade.
He was actually really pretty chill. Like, and I mean, of course, they had people whenever he needed like water or whatever that stuff, but. You know, for his character, it didn't matter if he was like messy or sweaty or, you know, because he's not a put together. I mean, he's put together in a sense, but
he can get his hands dirty, really.
Exactly. So he could look like that and be okay because, you know, he's dealing with the dark world. So.
I think it's funny that I didn't realize up to this point, Mr. Zeneca, that Zed didn't know that angels existed, and she had actually never met Manny yet. I completely forgot about that.
Because... Yeah, remember, time stops whenever Manny is in scene with John Constantine. So she hasn't actually seen him, hasn't actually interacted. The only thing she had the clue of was when Manny was around or going to be around, pennies from heaven started falling. You know, the symbol of fortune.
Correct, yes. Pennies from Heaven, by the way, is also the name of the sequel to Striptease 2. No, sorry. I'm sorry. I messed up the title. Showgirls. Showgirls 2, Pennies from Heaven. Not joking. Look it up on IMDb. Probably could have an entire podcast about that one. Is Enochian a real angel language, Mr. Zeneca? Have you ever heard of this, or is it just made up always for Hollywood?
It is not made up.
Okay.
There is a lot that goes on with the Enochian system of magic. I mean, it is such a complicated system. I don't even understand it fully. My fiancé actually works with it slightly because he is Thelemic. There are several different schools of magic that actually use bits of Enochian magic in it. But really, this system came about in the 16th century, so that's 1582 to 1589. And it's primarily on the work of four guys, John Dee, Edward Kelly, Samuel Little McGregor Mathers, and Aleister Crowley. Basically, the concept is that this Enochian magic tradition was dictated to them in certain ways from angels themselves. Came through from a scrying point of view, from actually the Archangel Raphael was said to have appeared at some point in time and reformed the witch angels or for the watchtowers. But in a nutshell, the entire magical system is based on tables and charts of symbols, which form the language. And so there is an angelic grid of 25 by 27 squares, and each square contains a letter, basically a symbol. And the angelic table is subdivided into four lesser grids, each representing the four elements and the four directions. And those are bound together by a cross-shaped tablet of union. It's highly mathematical in the way that the magic is done. As I said, I don't really fully understand it. It also has like 65 folios containing 101 complex magical grids within that. So each one of these grids indicate a certain trait or number or letter or angelic deity. You use them in combinations to actually get your magic. One of the interesting things, though, is the most common use of Enochian magic is with the calling of the quarters, the watchtowers. I'm sure, you know, in pop culture you've heard calling of the watchtowers before. But in Enochian magic, you use the names of the angels. East is Raphael, which is also air. South is Michael, and that's fire. West is Gabriel, and that's water. And north is Uriel, which is earth. In the Thelemic tradition, it's the sound of the words that actually carry the meaning, not the actual word itself. So while you're saying Raphael, it's your intonation that creates the magic. The arrangement is used in the Golden Dawn tradition, the Hermetic tradition of the Golden Dawn, Thelema, Wicca, and the Church of Satan. Otherwise, you can instead, for the watchtowers, use the gatekeepers, which are the demonic angelic keepers. So they are Azazel, Amion, Abaddon, and Baal. You can also alternatively use the demons. So that's Lucifer to the east, Baal to the north, Leviathan to the west, and Satan to the south. So in case you guys are doing the dark magic. So as I said, there's a lot of information on Enochian magic. If you really want to get into it, it's a ceremonial magic. So it's very high magic, as they say. I do a lot of kitchen witchery. So I don't really like the grand ceremonies that go on for hours. You know, but it is a very interesting, if you are of that persuasion, it's great to look into. But this is all completely legit.
Now, is there any type of book that you reference this from that you'd recommend people go and look up?
You know, there are so many different books and texts. There is the Liber Mysterium, and then there's also Books of Enoch, not the Bible Book of Enoch, but there's a different Book of Enoch. And I would basically say your first stop is just to go to the Wikipedia page and go to the references, the source material. Because each one of those magical schools of thought have their own versions. So Aleister Crowley's work on it is going to be different than Samuel Mather's work on it, and the Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn. The way you use it is different. Like you have the quarters, which the watchtowers, which almost everyone uses in some form. The names can change, the purpose is the same. And then there's 30 pillars of workings, and that you only get to that pillar once you've completed a magical level, I guess you'd call it. So Golden Dawn tradition is very, you have to pass a certain point and then you get initiated into another level. So if you're interested into it, I'd say go to Wikipedia, look at the resources, do some reading, and then perhaps go to one of the spiritual groups and learn from them directly, because that, I think, is the only way you're actually going to learn the real thing. Golden Dawn specifically was very secretive about their use of the Enochian magic for, you know, centuries. So what you might find online might not actually be the true versions, because there are some sort of mysteries to it that you can only get once you're initiated past a certain point.
Wow. That was better than any Sunday Bible school that I would have ever gone to as a child. Look at that, Megan. You get something a little different with this podcast.
Yeah. That's awesome.
So, wow. we noticed that the patient that the priest heals goes a little crazy in the hospital, suspecting us that anyone who's healed by the priest, something really bad ends up happening to him. And that's when Zed gets a vision that she thinks it's possibly an angel. And John tries to call Manny for help, but of course Manny's not. Doesn't seem to show up until later on in the episode.
Let me touch a little bit about how John tries to call Manny, because you know it's spiritual, so that's my bag. In the sand, right by the lake of dead fish, because according to the story of this episode, is that if you're healing someone, that healing energy has to come from somewhere else.
Correct.
So John draws a snake eating its own tail in the sand, and that symbol is called an Ouroboros. That symbolizes the endless cycle of creation and destruction, and it basically means one is all. And then the herb that he grinds up in his hands and throws it over the circle is dried myrtle, he says, and that actually is a protective herb, and it's also used extensively for love magic. So he's trying to bring a bit of that protection plus love. It has a great backstory with Daphne escaping Apollo, you know, being turned into a myrtle tree, you know, to escape rape, you know, but,
yikes.
Yeah. So, he blows that over the circle, and then the symbol that shows up very, very briefly, you know, in the sky is the symbol of Chiro, and that's Chiro monogram. And it's two letters. It looks like an X and a P. So it's the Chi, which looks like an X, and Rho, which looks like the P in the Greek alphabet. And so those are the actual symbols of Christ or Christianity. So he's trying to draw the Christian angels to the circle, and specifically. Oh. So, yeah.
And then Zed sings the Imogen song, and we encounter Imogen out in the field, buried. It looked like you were buried, Megan, underneath the ground.
In leaves.
In leaves.
So, mm-hmm.
And you have the crazy eyes with the contacts in them. Do you enjoy poking yourself in the eyeballs? Because I really don't like contacts.
That's the biggest story, I think, of the whole filming, was the contacts. So I don't wear contacts. I'm very fortunate to have great eyes and vision, and so
you do have beautiful eyes, by the way.
Thank you. And so, you know, they were like, go to your local eye doctor place and get your everything measured, so that, because they were gonna make contacts for me, the painted contacts, and I was so excited. They're like, also try and see if you can do it yourself. Luckily they had someone, because I just could not figure it out. I couldn't figure out how to put it in and get it in. I commend anybody who wears contacts. Luckily, the lady obstetrician who helped me put them in every time, she was really great about it. What was weird, though, is when they're painted, you can barely see out of them. So I also, Harold, when I worked with Harold, Manny, he wears them all the time too. And I'm just like, you know, I would kind of ask and be like, you know, like, I assume they're supposed to be like itchy, and like, they're like, yeah, we're working in a barn, so it's going to be itchy. And I wore them for, you know, 9 hours in a barn with dirt, never worn contacts in my life. And after we went on our like dinner break, and she took out the contacts and my eyes swole shut. They wouldn't physically open. Like, she couldn't even get, she had to put steroids in my eyes in order to open them to make sure like nothing was like wrong. And then they ended up sending me to the hospital.
Oh my God.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, because I was just, and they were like, you can't, I was like, I'm so sorry. Like, they're like, no, like, you know, I should have known. You have, people with blue eyes are a little bit more sensitive, so you shouldn't wear contacts for that long a period. So I ended up having to stay, because we filmed on a Friday and I was supposed to be done that day, and I ended up staying an extra weekend, which was awesome. I got to just stay in Atlanta, and but it was just, and then after that, they CGI'd the rest of my eyes, so they wouldn't put contacts in my eyes after that. So half the time, my eyes are the contacts, and then half the time is just amazing, amazing work of the CGI guys who are incredible, and I'm so blown away by technology these days. What they did with just an iPad is incredible.
Wow.
Yeah. So
how long did it take the swelling to go down?
So I couldn't open my eyes for probably at least another 4 hours. And then after that, I couldn't see because you're looking out of a very small hole for an extended period of time, your vision goes for a bit until like it can correct itself. And I asked Manny about that as well. I was like, is it supposed to be blurry? Cause I can't really see anything. Did I just lose my vision too? he's like, no. And so then after that, it was like another like 6 hours until I could fully see, like have my 20/20 vision again. It was nuts.
Just out of curiosity, because you worked on this show and you've been on How to Get Away with Murder, and other TV series. I don't have your IMDb list up right here in front of me, but how long does it take to film an average episode? How long compared to this episode and you having to go to the hospital?
Oh, it's crazy how some things take a long time, but television is so quick. So this was supposed to be like, basically I worked for like 3 days and then I was supposed to be gone. It ended up being like a 5-day stint. Because of my eyes. But yeah, it's really quick. With How to Get Away, it kind of varied. There was some parts I was there for, like, depending on the episode, I was there for, like, you know, for it only takes a week to film each episode, which is really impressive. And it depends on, like, the stunts and if anyone wants to do some sort of, like, rehearsal. But it ranges anywhere from like 4 days per episode usually, because usually it's like a whole week and I'm not part of like the entirety of, you know, there's a lot more to film. So it's amazing how quickly it goes. So when people like watch this like full episode, you're just like, yeah, that only took a couple of days. It's amazing. Versus like a film, which can take months, and well, now we're getting to it to being shorter, but you know, it takes much longer and you can have much more time with the rehearsal and the work, which this character was so fun because, you know, I kind of just like came in with an idea of how I saw Imogen, and you know, the director was amazing and he really worked with me, and of course, you know, on top of that, they CGI or they changed my voice up. And
yeah, I was going to get to that later on when you start talking all sinister, fallen angel like later on in the podcast. I wanted to talk a little bit about the your echoey voice.
Yeah.
Imogen, we find out, of course, will die with her feather removed. But I guess that's the case with any angel. You remove just one feather, and the angel will die. That's kind of unusual, considering how, you know, angels are flapping their wings and flying, but I guess they're supposed to being these perfect body people. They don't shed like skin cells or hair like humans do.
Absolutely.
So there is a line though that I love. Zed comes up with to John after she's questioning his belief in religion, considering that, you know, she knows angels exist and God exists. Mr. Zeneca, she says, "You act like religion is for suckers."
Yeah. That's good.
Yeah, definitely. Which is John's attitude, and it is kind of funny that he doesn't have any faith, considering that he does know that there is a God, and he knows angels exist, and demons, and hell, and Lucifer, and things like that.
Yeah.
In the show, I think it is behind, it is behind the comic illustration of what he knows about the devil and God specifically, because in the comics, in Hellblazer, one of his demon friends, Ellie, actually pulls the heart out of the angel Gabriel after he has his fall to Earth, because he ended up, wanting to have sex with Ellie, not thinking that she was a demon, that she was a human, and because she had sex with a demon, he then was not qualified to actually be an angel anymore, and his wings got removed. So that basically a constantly bleeding wound in his back area, and that he always felt the absence of heaven. And then John later on finds out that God is really more of a kind of a imbecile, if you want to call it that, because the way it's explained to Hellblazer is that John talks to the devil when the devil is trying to get his soul from, you know, that John is constantly tricking this guy and weaseling out of every single way to get him to go to hell. And when it finally comes down to it, John recognizes that God created the devil as basically a pulling apart of himself. So he took that little voice inside his head and brought it out into form, and that was his conscience. So the devil is actually God's conscience. And when the person in front of him was not agreeing with him, that's when he was cast down. And so the devil is more like a slice of God than actually, you know, a separate individual being, like an angel.
John and Zed both try to get the feather from the priest and fail about doing it. As Imogen is dying, this baptism that they do by the lake, I've had that done to me before.
In a lake?
No, it was actually in a bath in a church. We didn't go to a lake.
Okay.
But it was a bath in a church when I was in Georgia. Funny enough, actually, it was in Georgia when I was in the service. When you're in the service, especially in boot camp, you kind of turn to all sorts of different things. It's kind of like prison. And anyone who's been to boot camp can attest to that. So you start like believing in God and stuff like that. And there was at a point in my life that I did have a strong belief in God and faith and Christ and all that sort of stuff. And that's a whole other conversation. But I did have the dipping of the head of the baptism. Seems to turn everyone in this episode into a psycho killer. If I had some Talking Heads music to get ready to play, I'd probably cut that in right now. And this is where Megan then starts you start talking as Imogen a lot, and your voice sounds very light, but you can definitely tell there's some looping with the echoing. And then later on when you show your true feathers, get it, ha ha ha,
that was a good one.
thank you, I'm here all night. You have that complete like echoing with your voice. Now, did you have to go to a studio to do that, or did they just do that all in post without you?
No, they just did it. Like, I had no idea what they were going to do with my voice. That was the amazing part about watching it, is I was like fascinated to like one, see of course the CGI, and then two, see like just what they did with it. So I kind of just did my own like thing with the acting, and then they just on top of that like dubbed and changed and. It's amazing what they can do. It's impressive.
While John and the priest are in the church, when they escape from the ravenous people, it kind of reminded me of Night of the Living Dead, Mrs. Zeneca.
It does, you know, because the ghouls, technically they're still living. They're still living people, but they're controlled by the influence of the feather. Yeah, the breaking down of the doors. John and Zed put a peek in front of the doors, and I would think that this is the douchebag moment in the episode. The priest doesn't help John secure the door.
Correct. Yeah, no.
Not at all. Like, he's just standing there saying, I deserve this. And it's like, dude, help out of guy, you know?
Now, Megan, for every episode of this podcast, when our previous show that we covered, which was called Kindred the Embraced, it's based on a role-playing game called Vampire the Masquerade, we had the... We had the bromance moment of the episode because there were two male characters that were always very bromantic with each other.
And
yum-yum moment. Now, with Constantine, we've changed it to the douchebag moment of the episode, and the yum-yum moment will stay. And the yum-yum moment actually will go to you get the yum-yum award in that costume with the corset and the black and the wings and just the way you look.
It
looked so fucking hot.
thank you. It hands was down. Amazing. Like, the costume design, like, they are working on such a tight schedule. It's amazing. Like, that top is actually, like, from a rant, like, a store, like, a... from BCBG. They added chains to it, they belted it, like, and the skirt is from a pageant store. I was like, the fact you put this together, and I felt, oh, so cool.
You looked like a gothic goddess, I have
to say. Oh my god, yeah, I absolutely fell in love with you in that episode. And this is my podcast, and I'm not afraid to say that to you, to your face over Skype, just how insanely sexy you looked as the badass angel.
Oh, I mean, who doesn't love playing like a villain? It's like so good and juicy, especially like the twist. It's like you didn't know.
You said, oh, good, no, so good and
like,
juicy.
None of the characters knew. And then coming in and like getting to do that and then getting to see people's reactions after being like, yep, I was the bad guy the whole time. You just didn't know it. You know, like sweet little old me. So, yeah, it was amazing. And the costuming was amazing. And I got to do a little bit of flying. That was cool. One of the rigs, they kind of like flew me up, and like, how cool is it to pretend that, I mean, granted, I had to just imagine I had wings, but they were like, okay, you're going to flap once and then you're going to flap twice. So, and then at this point you're going to put down your wings. So like you have to, as an actor, you don't get to do that every day.
So was those that like the shoulder shrugs and.
Yeah. You know, so it was just control? Like. I just kind of imagined what it would be like, you know, it was just, yeah, using your imagination and me doing like a bunch of like shoulder things and like chest up and like just like kind of the way a bird kind of moves, you know, it's kind of what I thought of, like more of like a hawk, I guess, than a bird, because they were, you know, I would ask the CGI guy, I was like, so how big are my wings? They're like, they're massive. So they kind of showed me like the mock-up of them before I did it, so I could kind of imagine how far out they went on my body. And I just, I think I love every single gif that everybody made of that, of my character. I'm just like, it's amazing.
You know what's kind of disappointing is that the box set that came out for Constantine, I wasn't sure if you were aware that they put all the episodes out in a complete box set that you can pick up from the Warner Archives website.
I did not know that.
Yeah. Cool. There's not a lot of bonus material on there, and stuff like you being hoisted up or Harold, Harold who plays Manny, obviously he does a lot of flying too, but it would have been great to see some like, behind the scenes of being the hoisted up or some bloopers of like, you know, like him being stuck up there. Because I see that a lot sometimes in a lot of TV shows and movies where they have to be on wire work, like in The Matrix or The Avengers, and you see the actors getting stuck on the wire because the wire harness isn't working correctly and they're like dangling with their one legs up in the air and they're half sideways, you know, and it's just, it's a hilarious, usually little Easter gag reel extra.
Especially with all the effects that they have, and I cannot, that's impressive that they didn't even have a little bit of it, but yeah, it was definitely I wish more people could see the behind the scenes. I know somebody on put out the reel of it, like they showed the different layers of the CGI. And I thought that was amazing. It's actually, he posted it on Twitter and tagged me, and I was just like, this is incredible. Like, he showed the before without it, and it basically all they did is put like a bunch of like orange tape marks on my back if they showed my back, or because someone did make a like a wing harness, but we only used that like once. I think most of it was CGI because it just looked amazing. And then it showed like the between stage of like just seeing the mock-up, and then it showed the final product, and it shows it for the whole thing. Same with the snake, because the snake's fake too. In his, when the preacher's hand, just showed all the different stages. And I thought that was cool. And they definitely should have done way more stuff like that. Cause I think seeing all that, it builds the whole character of it. I think the technical side is just as big of an element as, you know, our characters and the story and, you know, all of it. So
you should.
I think I'm going to try to find that somewhere so we could post it on our the Dead TV Podcast Facebook page.
Definitely. Yeah, yes. Absolutely. Definitely do that by Wednesday, because this Megan, this episode will we are recording this episode for everyone listening on Sunday, June 11th, and it will be posted on this week's Wednesday. So you can look forward to it there. But the gag reel and bonus material stuff, if you're director of The Eyes, here's a little name drop, for Robert Bryan's movie, who came on the Radio of Horror show, you should mention him to find out if there's been any behind-the-scenes stuff filmed or any gag reel stuff filmed that maybe he can convince whoever's going to put the film out on DVD to put it onto the bonus material for that film.
Absolutely, yes, and I hope he has a ton, because we had a mess of a time behind the scenes, because it was such like a high stress movie that we just had to have a really good time, because it was also very hot, so we sweat a lot, and I think our brains were melting by the end of certain days, so lines just weren't coming out normal. Yeah. So it'd definitely be a good one to watch.
Now, we find out that Imogen's crime is that she killed a mortal. And I'm thinking to myself, isn't the Bible filled with stories of angels involved with, like, the deaths of mortals and stuff? Why is she being
picked
on?
Well, usually it's directed by God. And so that's why they're allowed to do it.
You just did it for kicks, because that you get off on that sort of thing, right, Megan?
Because I could, yes. I think that's, like, one of my lines.
Yeah. One of the things that is very interesting is that Manny is so curious about what it feels like to basically be corporeal. And you say that it's very, very painful, and the pain comes in waves or whatnot. And he asks a question about feeling the sun for the first time. And that really is reminding me of the Nicolas Cage movie, City of Angels.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Meg Ryan and Nicolas Cage, City of Angels, because in that, they say that angels can't feel anything, but they can hear the dawn. And so when Nicolas Cage becomes, you know, corporeal, he's able to feel the sun for the first time and feel the waves splash against his body. I think that was a very – I'm not sure whether that was a base that bit of dialogue on City of Angels or that – idea, because that's not really supported by any of the theology that angels can't feel anything.
Really?
So, yeah. Yeah, I can't find any trace where it said that angels can't feel anything.
Well, the angels angels on Supernatural are all like beings of light and stuff. They don't have any type of corporeal form either.
Supernatural doesn't really go on as much truth as, you know,
true.
So I'd like to think.
Yeah, true. But also in City of Angels with Nicolas Cage, weren't they all Grim Reapers, though? They weren't like Michael and Gabriel and Raphael and stuff like that. They were all Reapers. Or am I wrong?
Well, they served a specific function. Is they were there to comfort humanity, you know, in different ways. They can touch someone and bring them peace. And their jobs were to take them over to the other side. So they were pretty much all-purpose angels.
Oh, okay.
You know, they gave people comfort in times of grief. They took the dead and crossed them over. They created, guardianship over people themselves. Yeah, it was almost like all the angels were pretty much had just one duty, and that is just to serve man.
Now, Megan, you have one of the best death scenes in the show, right out of Mortal Kombat, with a fatality, having your heart ripped out. That is fucking awesome. And immediately, as soon as I saw that, I was like, flawless victory. Let Mortal Kombat begin. And it's like, I think it's Scorpion in Mortal Kombat or Sub-Zero. And man, if you're a Mortal Kombat fan, please correct me. But yeah, one of the Mortal Kombat characters will rip your heart out and just like raise it above his head.
Yeah.
And then later on in the episode, when your heart's in the jar, it kind of reminds me, your heart is still beating. It reminds me in Jason Goes to Hell, the final Friday, when the FBI blow the shit out of Jason Voorhees in the beginning of the movie, his heart is still beating. It's his black gray heart, which is what your heart kind of looks like in the episode. It's not pinkish and red. It's all black and gray.
Yeah, I loved it. It was amazing to, like, see it in his hand, and I was like, wow.
So where
like,
he...
it was, like, cut and then step away. And
okay. Yeah, that's what I was going to ask. So you just, like, step out of frame as they just, like, have the the heart there.
Yeah, we did like different takes of like him like going in, like just looking at me, and then me like getting my heart like ripped out of me out of complete surprise, and then just like a step away of like once he has my heart, then I'm like like my entity has disappeared, and he has just, and they put so much blood on it. They kept throwing more and more. It was amazing. I was just like, whoa. Yeah.
That must have been totally killer to tape.
Oh yeah. It was awesome.
And I always love acting. I always love asking this of actors and actresses. Do you have a death toll kept for the characters you have been killed off in your movies and TV?
Oh my gosh.
I know it sounds morbid, but you gotta think about like Sean.
No, it's true though. Like, it's like, well, where do your characters go? Well, they just get killed off. I think I've had like 3 or 4 by now. So, like
Sean Bean holds the record for the number of deaths on TV and movies.
Really?
Yeah. Like, you look up his IMDb credits, and then look up a there's a great meme of Sean Bean on the throne, you know, the Sword of Thrones from the Iron Throne from Game of Thrones, which of course he was, you know, beheaded in. Spoiler alert for anyone who's never watched the show or read the book that's like 20 fucking years old, Sean Bean dies on Game of Thrones. There's a listing of all the different ways Sean Bean has died, including like the number of times that those deaths have been repeated. Like, you know, we need like, and it's like kind of like a rally cry. What? Like, we need to save Sean Bean from the deaths of Hollywood.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's fun. That's too funny.
Manny gives John a ominous warning that the veil between heaven and hell is growing thinner at the moment. As we pan away to Megan's heart in the jar, and then later on, Zed has stood up Eddie, unfortunately, but Eddie asked Zed out for it in nefarious means, most likely tied to the downfall of John Constantine.
Yeah, that is the symbol around the neck of the guy that's in the shadows is the symbol of the Resurrection Army.
Ah, okay, that was going to ask about that.
Straight from the comics.
Yeah. Oh, good. Okay. And so that will probably lead into the first double episode of Constantine that we will do in 2 weeks, the two-part episode.
Ooh.
Yeah, we're going to review them both at the same time since it's a double episode.
Yes.
Or two-parter.
Two-parter. And that will be an extra long episode of the Dead TV podcast, and a two-part episode I've been looking forward to, because this is the coming darkness that Manny has been prophesizing for the last few episodes coming to a head at the halfway point of the show. Thank you very much, Megan, for coming on the show with us.
Thank you for joining us. This was so much fun.
Yes. Thanks. Have you done many podcasts before?
No podcast, just interviews, really. So this is exciting, my first podcast.
Very cool. Woo-hoo! Very cool.
Yeah. So thank you very much. It was a pleasure.
What are you working on currently? I see something called Apparition. It doesn't seem like you can escape the horror genre, it looks.
No, I'm still going with the horror. So psychological thriller horror, and this horror is based on a true story.
Ooh.
Ooh.
Yes. So it should be exciting. I think they're in editing mode, and I can't wait to like see how it turns out, and hopefully we did it justice of the story.
Well, if you happen to know when the movie starts being screened with critics and stuff like that, you should tell them to be like, oh, I did this podcast with this guy who did this movie with my director, The Eyes. You should send him a screener, and you know, because he seems interested in horror stuff, since the name of his show is Radio of Horror.
And Radio of Horror has been on the air for over 10 years.
That's amazing.
We are currently
Congrats.
Coming up. Thank you. We are currently coming up on our 10th anniversary this October 15th.
Wow. Congrats. That's amazing. Well, I definitely will, because it's definitely a horror film, and lots of people get killed.
You have some social media that people can follow you on. Why don't you give it away?
Yes. All my social media is the same. It's at the Megan West. So, yeah, follow me and follow my journey as I continue down this crazy road, hopefully with more and more. I love horror genre, so exciting.
Definitely.
Excellent. And we wish you the best of success in all your endeavors.
Aw, you as well, you guys. Thanks.
Mr. Zeneca, why don't you give away your contact information that people can find you on?
You can find me on Twitter at elegantlykinky and my website, elegantlykinky.com.
You can find us both on the Facebook page, The Dead TV Podcast, and you can follow all of the Radio Horror shows on @ChrisDSAV, Radio Horror Network, and as well as Radio Horror on Facebook. All the prior episodes of Constantine and the prior episodes of our previous show that we covered, Kindred the Embraced, can be found on our website, www.radiohorror.com. Thank you everybody very, very much. Thank you, Mr. Zeneca, and thank you, Megan.
You're welcome.
You. And we leave you now with the music from the Dead TV Podcast, with the theme song by Jess O'Lantern.